Chapter 6. Malachurst. Malachurst passed through the vengeful spirit as a ghost. The passages he moved through were narrow, and until recently, untrodden by all but the lowest maintenance servitors. Pipes and bundles of cables lined the circular walls. The air buzzed with static. There was almost no light, but his eyes gathered the scraps of what there was and made an image of the world for him in grey monochrome. A loose cloak covered his armour, but what truly hid him was not the cloak, nor the shroud of cantrips that stole the sound and sight of his passing. What made him invisible was simply that he walked where no one else walked. There were marks from the wolves' incursion here, spent shells, splinters of ceramite, the soot and dust of explosions. Malachurst moved past them, listening all the while to the change in the ship's pulse. It was breaking anchor, it and its court of warships. Out in the darkness, vast engines would be pouring plasma into the void. Signals would be flicking between vessels. Huge craft would slide into position next to the vengeful spirit. The warp drives would kindle soon and begin to loosen the weave of reality. He thought of Axemand, doubting noble Axemand, the last simple warrior of the Mournaval. He thought of him standing on the bridge, watching the flow of commands across the fleet, the stitched mask of his face furrowed by thoughts of the greater war far beyond what he could see. He was an able commander who had overseen the breaking of worlds, but the command of a war like this was beyond even him. He had coped so far, following the direction of the War Master's last orders. But soon that momentum would run out. Axemand knew that. Knew that only the War Master could hold together the storm he had created. But what would that understanding do to Axemand? How would the weight of the unknown colour his actions? Malachurst thought he knew, and he did not like the answer that he saw. He paused at a junction, checked his position against his mental map, and looked for the floor hatch. Sure enough, there it was, its edges hidden by dust and a layer of corrosion. He knelt, fingers finding the release. He paused, looking along each of the dark branches of the tunnel around him.
"I know you are there," he said. "The need for theatrics is tiresome."
"But prudence and care are never without value," answered a voice from the dark.
A hiss of breath and a scrape of sharp metal on metal came from the dark, as Sota Nul unfolded into sight, mechadendrites pulling her from a fissure between two pipes like a spider emerging from a burrow. Malachurst felt his jaw clench. The sight of Kelbor Hal's representative always made him think of the sound of insect carapaces crunching under his boot.
"I hope that you have followed through with all aspects stroke necessities of your plan, twisted one," she said.
A wet clicking noise came from beneath the black folds of her robes. Malachurst wondered if it was a smile or a laugh.
"If you have made an error, the outcome is unlikely to be favourable for you."
"You have my thanks for being here," he said,
fighting to stop his teeth gritting as he spoke.
"The values of sincerity in your voice are below your usual achievement level," she said. "Of course you are pleased that I am here. Your intent could scarcely have hope of success without my presence stroke cooperation."
He let out a quiet breath. She was right, of course, but he still would have liked to shoot her.
"Let's move," he said,
reaching for the handle of the hatch in the floor. Sota Nul raised a single mechadendrite. Malachurst stopped, held by the gesture. He noticed for the first time that the three manipulators at the end were human fingers, the skin waxen and yellow.
"A moment," said Sota Nul.
The human fingers began to curl shut, one joint at a time.
"There,"
she said, as the last digit closed. A deep swell of vibration rolled through the floor and walls as the warp engines came online in the depths of the ship. In the Warren tunnels, the slaves and menials would be still, eyes closed, some moaning, some whispering prayers to the new gods. In the command nodes, eyes would be watching for system failures or temporal anomalies. Sota Nul's brothers and sisters in the Mechanicum would be crooning over their systems. Even if one of the ship's systems would normally have noticed a sub-maintenance hatch open, the chances of that alert being heeded were now negligible. Malaghurst pulled the hatch open and swung into the space beneath it. His twisted flesh protested, but he overrode the pain with a twitch of will. Sota Nul followed him, climbing down suspended between her mechadendrites. She pulled the hatch closed after them. Malaghurst began to climb down the shaft, hands and feet finding the rungs bolted into the wall.
"It is fortunate that the wolves did not find this route," said Sota Nul as they descended.
"How would they?" asked Malaghurst. "Even that fool Loken did not know this ship as well as he thought. To find places like this, you have to look with a different eye."
"A traitor's eye."
"An eye that does not assume that anything is innocent," replied Malaghurst.
"The Justerin will be watching, even if they do not know of this exact route into the throne chambers. They will be watching."
"They will,"
agreed Malaghurst. Kyber. Ever the shadow of Abaddon, but without the depths that the first captain hid behind his mask of aggression. The Widowmaker would have to be dealt with if this gambit did not succeed. While the current situation worked slowly on Axeman's weaknesses, the effect had been swift with Kyber. He had reverted to suspicion, to denial and protection. He would never have agreed to what Malaghurst was going to try. Worse, he would have killed the equerry if he had attempted it openly. Malaghurst had seen that in Kyber's eyes outside the throne room with Lorgar. He was terrified, but could feel no fear. And that paradox did things to the mind. Predictably human things.
"You do not seem concerned," said Sota Nul.
"I have your help, do I not?"
said Malaghurst, stepping from the wall of the shaft to the passage floor beneath. He could feel the purr of sensor waves vibrating just at the edge of hearing. If he stepped a meter either way at this point, alerts would begin to sound that even the warp translation would not mask.
"Does not the representative of the Fabricator General pass where she will?"
Sota Nul slithered down to his side. She rotated her head, code clicking and hissing from beneath her cowl. The murmur of the sensors vanished.
"If you open a door and find a weapon aimed at you, that freedom has limited utility."
Malaghurst moved down the tunnel. This close to his goal, he could feel the warp flexing and shivering, even within the dampening envelope of the Geller field. So close. He just had to hope that he had judged right. He reached the door. It was small, heavy, and the locking mechanism within it was intricate and strong enough to hold back an army. Sota Nul drifted forwards, and then jerked to a halt a meter from Malaghurst. Her hooded head twitched, then turned to look at him. The colour of the lenses within her cowl shifted from violet to crimson.
"There are reports of riots amongst the menial gangs."
Malaghurst smiled to himself.
"A common enough occurrence during a translation, though ill-advised on their part. They will not survive retribution."
Sota Nul shook her head again.
"Somehow they have penetrated the command citadel. Their numbers are large. Indications are that they have succumbed to a mass derangement of suicidal magnitude. The Justerin have moved personally to seal the throne chamber levels."
"Oh, now a coincidence like that could be considered convenient,"
he said, keeping his voice flat.
"Please open this door now."
"There will still be one of the first company within,"
hissed Sota Nul.
"Not even your serpent ways could remove that honor guard from his place."
"No,"
he replied.
"I could not do that. Now open the door."
The tech witch hesitated. Her mechadendrites flexed in the air for a second, and then she drifted forwards, muttering sounds that might have been screeds of machine code, or whatever passed for curses amongst her kind. She stopped in front of the door and pulled a key from beneath her robe with the waxen fingers. It was made of black metal, and its teeth glinted with circuitry in the red light of her eyes. She slotted it into the door and turned it. A murmur of machinery purred through the door, and then it hinged away from them. Malachurst ducked through, followed by the tech witch, and stepped into the shadows of the War Master's throne room. An aimed bolter waited for them, steady in the hands of a black-armored warrior. Malachurst inclined his head briefly. Behind the calm mask of his face, he remembered the last time they had met. Days ago, in the utter quiet of one of the vengeful spirit's forgotten reaches.
"Do you understand what I am asking of you?"
he had asked.
"Treachery," the warrior said. "You're asking for treachery."
Malachurst held the warrior's gaze unblinking, and then nodded once.
"Exactly. Then we have an understanding," the warrior said. "If you fail, or are discovered," he began, "then I will end with my head impaled on a spike at best, and at worst, a lot worse than that."
The warrior grinned the last words, showing rows of steel teeth with delicately sharp points. His face was pale, the eyes amber, and the gang tattoos that curled on his cheeks were like shadows cast by the wings of crows.
"Your reward? Power is risk, is it not, Lord Equerry? I risk that you might prove less subtle than your reputation. And then we both..."
He paused, the grin still in place.
"Well, we shall suffer the price. But if you succeed in whatever it is that you are doing, then you will need those you can trust, those that have served you. What's the point of making demands now? My reward is to rise as your enemies fall, Lord. That's the way of things. That's the understanding I have. That is what I am agreeing to."
Malachurst nodded.
"You were always perceptive. I am what I will," the warrior said. "Cometh the hour, Captain," said Malachurst.
The black-armored warrior held still for a second and then dropped his aim.
"You're late,"
said Callus Ekadon. Lyak. The platform descended into the waiting dark. Cries rose from the spiral of gantries on the shaft wall. The sky above was spider-webbed with lightning. 47 figures stood on the platform. The ashen oracles had labored over entrails and smoke for 10 nights to determine the numbers most likely to be accepted by the doorway, and the most favorable moment for their departure. Lorgar, Actea, and 42 warriors of the Unspeaking stood with Lyak and his 2 blade slaves. Votive tapers of skin, written with blood, hung from the warrior's armor. The rain ran down them, leaving gritty smears on the lacquered crimson.
"Under the eyes of the gods we pass," said Lyak.
The chosen warriors clashed their weapons to their armor. Actea raised her head, and even though her face did not turn towards him, he could feel her mind fix on him before moving away.
"What do you want, Hollow One?"
she had asked in her fane of black stone.
"I want nothing," he replied.
"Then why are you here?"
"The gods guide all," called Lorgar, as the darkness closed over them. He turned his face upwards, eyes closed, black rain running from his gold-dusted features. The cry echoed, the symbols of the words flaking away with each second. "The gods guide. Guide all. Gods. All." Hundreds of devotees gathered on the gantries, wailed as the ritual masters cut the throats of the first in line and pushed them into the abyss. The dying humans fell past the platform. Blood pattered on Laek's armor.
"Lorgar did not order you to be here,"
Actea said as he stepped into the shrine.
"Your question is yours alone. I see it in your face."
He had gone to find her the night before their descent into the webway. She was alone in the fane. It was cut into the shaft wall, its lone door ringed by silver-threaded carvings of scenes alluded to in the Book of Lorgar.
"Let none enter,"
he had commanded Kulnar and Hebek as he stepped over the threshold. Darkness filled the spaces within, the only light the glow of his staff and the eyes of his mask. The air inside was fetid and hot. The nostrils of his mask opened to allow him to inhale the scents. Decay, blood, sweat, and incense. Rot-draped bones covered the floor. Some looked as though they had been neatly butchered, others hacked, a few gnawed. Etched discs of copper hung from the low ceiling on threads. He knew most of the symbols. The fact that he did not know all of them disturbed him more than the force with which they pressed into his mind.
"He did not send you here,"
Actea said as she turned towards him with her sightless eyes.
"And he does not know that you are here. So, Eater of Names, most high and loyal servant of Lorgar, most high amongst the blessed, why do you come with questions?"
Corpusant danced on the cables as the platform descended. The lights of the gantries above were growing smaller. The storm-lashed sky was a shrinking circle. Layak listened to the power crackle over the metal. Agony clawed at him from the inside of his mask. He breathed.
"I see your face,"
she said, reaching out with a bloody hand. He flinched back, even though she was too far away to touch him.
"You were beautiful once. Do you remember?"
"No," he said.
"Do you wish to remember?"
"It is not permitted," he said. She tilted her head as though in question.
"By whom?"
"It is blasphemy to know." The platform halted its descent with a jolt. Laek's sight snapped back into focus, as though he were waking from a dream. His eyes had been open all the while. He could not close them, the lids having long ago been cut from above his eye sockets. He could feel blood crusting on his lips. Kulnar glanced at him. Laek felt the slave's hate boiling behind the obedient query.
"Nothing."
Layak formed the words in his skull so that Kulnar might hear.
"It is nothing."
Kulnar rotated his gaze back to the distance and took his hand from the hilt of his sword. The burning cracks on his gauntlet closed. The platform swayed as Lorgar moved to the edge. Above, the cables reached up to a vanishing point.
"This is it," said the Primarch.
Actea nodded once.
"It is."
"How do we proceed?" She shrugged.
"With faith."
"Of course," he said, and stepped from the platform and fell into nothingness. Layak walked to the edge. Blood was still falling from the sacrifices above, mixing with the rain as it ran off the grey of his armour. He looked down.
"Is our task blessed in the eyes of the gods?" he asked Actea.
"That is not what you came to ask," she replied.
8 corpses covered the floor of the fane. Each one had been pinned to the floor at one of the cardinal points of the octed. None of them had died quickly. Blood drained down runnels in the white marble floor. Actea stood at the centre of the 8-pointed star. Her robes were mottled with a deeper red, the velvet crusted.
"You are high priest of this new age of truth," she said. "Should you not know the answer? But if you have doubts, taste the augurs for yourself, Hollow One."
She held out a black glass athame. Layak did not take it. Actea shrugged and dropped the knife. She wiped the back of her hand across her face, leaving a bloody smear across her lips.
"Is the blessed Primarch right? Do we serve the true will of the gods?"
"Truth,"
Actea said, and bit her bloody lip.
"Truth is not what you want."
"Then why are we here?"
he asked.
At last, the true question, she said.
Lyak could feel the gaze of the other warriors on the platform and the burning glare of Actea watching him as he hesitated. Somehow he knew that she was smiling beneath her hood. He stepped off the edge and fell into silence. Volk. Alarms wailed through the iron blood as it breached the skin of reality. Volk was halfway up the primary spine arterial as the ship screamed. The pulsing blue of warp transition lights vanished. Amber lights blinked in time with the klaxon blare. Volk felt the deck lurch as force slammed through the superstructure. He bit off a stream of invective, clamped his helm in place, and began to run aft. Data spun past his sight as his display meshed with the ship's tactical output. 11 ships had ridden the warp with the Iron Blood, a smaller grand fleet than was usual, but still a force that could have conquered systems. There was the battleship Defiance, the fleet carrier Strontium Dawn, and the three heavy cruisers Stonebreaker, Sisyphus, and Trident. The macro bombardment ship, Enyo, was a block-bodied shadow to the Iron Blood. Her banks of munition launchers retracted behind the layered panels of her hull. Two strike cruisers, the Scepter of Orestes and the Iron Edict, formed the fleet's vanguard, while a squadron of three frigates, Maiden, Mother, and Crone, circled the hole, watchful and swift. All of them had just slammed out of the warp with no warning. Battle automata maniples folded out of niches to either side of the arterial passage. Scanning beams flickered over Volk, but they let him pass. He quickened his pace. He was alone. No bodyguard or entourage followed him when he walked the Iron Blood's passages. He ducked through an arch. Slab doors slammed open in front of him as his authorization codes overrode their lockdown. The ship was still juddering, vibrating with engine power and damage. He reached one of the primary transport hoists. Pulsing yellow lights surrounded it. He halted for the seconds that it took the doors to open. A hatch opened to his right. He whirled, hand on his bolter. Hold! Argonis came through the hatch opening, hand raised. The War Master's emissary was fully armoured, but without his cloak or scepter of office. Where is Perturabo? Asked Argonis as he followed. With the navigators, replied Volk. The door pistoned shut behind Argonis. Volk triggered the command override on the hoist controls. The platform shot upwards. Forces that would have slammed a mortal to the floor shuddered through Volk as the walls of the shaft blurred past. The hoist was covering a kilometre of hull in under a minute. Iris hatches peeled open above them and slammed shut as they passed. Where are we? Asked Argonis. Gas drift, said Volk, still trying to assimilate the data pouring into his eye from the ship's systems. Nothing here except dying stars and debris, dead and empty. Storm forced us out? Asked Argonis. Volk shook his head. The last 24 hours of passage had been bad. The warp had gusted into a fury, tugging the Iron Blood back even as it sliced onwards. Squalls of weeping and roars and rage had shivered over the fleet's Gellerfields, and the 12 ships had struggled to hold together, but they had ridden worse. All of the navigators in the Grand Fleet had looked into the black oculus. They could thread the eye of the abyss, and storms did not bar their passing. The walls of the lift shaft trembled. Lights cut off and blinked back on.
What caused this? Growled Argonis.
Volk shook his head.
I'm joining the Primarch in the primary navigator enclave,
said Volk. Above him he could see the green lights of the shaft roof blinking as they sped closer.
He summoned you?
Volk did not answer. The truth was that he had seen little of the Primarch since they had broken from Kraid. The passage had been filled with solitary training. With ammunition hoarded for true battle, there had been hours with sword, hammer, and axe, battering through servitor drones, all locked into the spinning cage of a fight simulacrum engine. Argonis had joined him for much of that training, matching blade and skill with Volk as the Iron Blood rode the edge of the storms. In that time, Perturabo had only called for him once.
The son of Horus, he had said as Volk entered his presence.
The Primarch was working on his exo-armor with a mind-linked mechadendrite cluster. Welding sparks flared. Bolt drivers spun with a high melody. Servo arms held armor plates, and fine manipulators wormed into the workings beneath. To Volk, it felt strangely like looking at a surgeon operating on his own sinew, the skin peeled and pinned back while the razors did their work.
"He has the arrogance of his kind. But he is true to the War Master?"
"Would he have been sent to us if he were not?" Volk asked.
"Yet it is never the truest lieutenants that are sent on such tasks. Never Abaddon, never Axemand, nor Malachurst."
"You think he has doubts, Lord?"
"I think he is flawed."
Volk hesitated and then nodded.
"Perhaps,"
he said.
"Find out for certain. And if he is, learn what weakness is in his heart."
Volk bowed his head but paused as he turned to go.
"Lord, what purpose does knowing such things about our allies serve?"
The machine array froze in motion for a second, the lightning of the welding torches holding above the metal.
"The same purpose that every deed and life has in this age," Perturabo said. "As a weapon."
The hoist slammed to a stop. Hazard-striped doors pistoned open in front of them as they entered the Navigator Enclave. Human screams replaced the sound of alarms. A small warship might only require a single navigator to steer it through the warp. Larger ships, though, required a cluster of them, so that the weight of guiding such a large mass through the Immaterium could be spread between them, and in case one of them died or went insane. Such occurrences were not uncommon. For a ship like the Iron Blood, the navigator presence was a whole branch of a house, or rather it had been. Things had changed after the voyage into the Eye of Terror. The Iron Blood's navigators had looked into the dark of the universe's heart. Those who survived had been altered. Volk strode down a corridor lined with seamless brushed steel. Faces carved from green jade and white alabaster decorated the walls. All of the sculpted faces were blindfolded, their jaws open to show carved teeth framing mouths of shadow. One of the iron circles stood before the doors to the navigation sanctuary, but it stood aside for Volk and Argonis with a clank of pistons and a pulse of scanning light. Cacophony filled the chamber beyond the door. The light of fire and stars poured in through the three triangular viewports that formed the chamber's front and side walls. There had been chairs for the navigators once, but they were long gone. Cages were suspended between the ceiling and floor. Figures hung between the bars, limbs splayed. They looked human, if you did not let your eye linger. Each of them had an iron mask riveted to the top of their skull, its blank surface broken only by an iris shutter on the forehead. The screams were coming from the three figures. Balloons of skin inflated in mutated throats, and openings that looked like gills rippled in between ribs. Perturabo stood before them. He was not looking at the screaming navigators. He was looking at the void.
"Lord Perturabo," said Argonis.
"We could not go further," he replied. "There is a pressure in the warp."
"The storms,"
began Argonis.
"Not the storms."
The Lord of Iron gestured at the navigators.
"Those who have looked into the black oculus can see the calm in storms. They can see everything. But something blinded them, emissary."
Volk realized that the navigators had stopped screaming. He could hear the thump hiss of the tubes and machines linked to their cages. In the distance, the ship's klaxon shouted on.
"What blinded them?"
asked Argonis.
"Fever, children,"
gasped one navigator.
"Fever, children."
And then the navigators were all saying the words, moaning them over and over again.
"Fever, children! Fever, children! Fever, children! Fever, children! Fever, children!"
Volk flinched as the direct link to the Iron Blood's command systems began to gush data into his ears and eyes. He felt his heart kick and his breath still in his lungs.
"Lord,
Allspec systems are reading multiple ship engine signatures, said Volk. Warships. They have lit weapons. They're broadcasting hails.
Volk paused.
Fever children, hissed the navigators.
Who are they?
Perturabo must have somehow been absorbing the same information, though Volk could not see how. The Lord of Iron was looking at Argonis. He had gone very still. Not a single muscle moved on his face. The weapon pods on his arms were silent.
They say that they are of the 16th Legion, said Volk. They say they are the sons of Horus.